So we had a torrential downpour here in California. Not so much Texas style, but California style. And our power went out. And boy, did people start freaking out. So I don't know how often your power goes out. I should probably get an external generator here. But our power went out last night. And first off, it's amazing because the kids were like, what did the kids say? Oh, they wanted to go jump in the shower. And, you know, they're going to like use a candle or a flashlight or whatever. And it's like, dude, no hot water, right? No Wi-Fi, no this, no that. Like it just, you don't realize just how dependent you are on power until it goes away, even for a short period of time. But I will say, I'm not getting paid to say this, but I just want to give a quick shout out to Devos, these Devos lights. I use them for outdoor men's club workouts, but I use them inside the house just to light the place up. Dude, these things are badass. So check them out, Devos Outdoors. But anyways, I just want to start that off by saying that shit got crazy here in California and our power went out for a couple hours and it really shows just how dependent we are on that stuff. And it's eye-opening for me. I think we got to get an external generator at some point.
How long is a few hours?
I mean,
and at what time?
So my parents went out from 8 a.m. and then they got it back at 8 p.m., which is like,
that's pretty decent. That's a full day. Yeah.
But bro, it's not like it's a, you know, negative 20 here and you have to really worry about like freezing in your house. So like, you know, it's 50 degrees outside or whatever it is. So it's not, I wouldn't put it on like the level of like, you know, life and death. It's more of just a major inconvenience. So for us, it went out at like 4 p.m. You know, like we saw the lights start to flicker and then it came back on around 9. So it wasn't that big of a deal.
It's interesting, man, because I think that it's like one of those things, I forget who talks about it. Maybe it was Rogan that's mentioned it, but like things like that remind you of just how like fragile this all is.
Dude.
You know, like we're so comfortable in so many ways and so reliant on like, this is how things will be always. And when you think about like, dude, what if the power for whatever reason went out, you know, you said for 8 hours, major inconvenience, what about for a week?
Bro.
Like a week's not that long, right? It's 7 days.
I think
days.
People be losing their shit. Dude, I think
7 days of no power would be like, I'm not exaggerating, like catastrophic in many ways. Like we're so reliant on having power for everything, like traffic, driving, work, security, communicating with, you know, law enforcement and emergency services. Like the list goes on. Like you think about something, just 7 days of no power and we would go back to the Stone Age. Like it would be complete anarchy. I'm exaggerating there, but
no,
you know what I mean?
It's
dude, we're hanging on by a thread.
So I was at dinner with Tim Kennedy at his like group meeting this like 2 weeks ago in Vegas. And the guy I was sitting next to happened to be a cybersecurity expert. And dude, talk about a guy who has like heavy weight on his shoulders. Cause he's the one that does all these analyzes all these different threats. And he supports companies in getting ahead of the threats. And we were talking about, I was like, hey man, so like, what's the biggest threat, right? And sure enough, that was a dumb question to ask. But he goes, our electrical infrastructure is terrible. He's like, there's seven main, and I don't want to butcher this, so this is very broad strokes. He's like, there's seven main electrical like areas throughout the United States. He's like, if two of them go down out of the seven, like everything goes down or something along those lines. And then he brought up like the same idea with you. He's like, it's estimated that if the power is out for a week, it'll cause complete like chaos, right? Because everything is driven by that, especially now with like credit cards and merchant. Like, dude, imagine if it all went out and you had to go get gas for your car. You'd think like, oh, pumping gas, no big deal. But I'm sure that the pumps, yeah, like, oh man, you don't even want to go down that path. Dude. If you start thinking about it too much, it's like, oh shit.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. And it's crazy because you take a step back and it's 7 days without electricity is like nothing compared to like, you know, how things were, you know, quote unquote, back in the day. It's just, we built such a house of cards that's reliant on these things that like, you know, we assume is like never going to go away. Like if the power goes out, you're fully like, you go on the website on your phone of like reported power outages and you're like, all right, what's the estimated time before you get it back? Right. You're like, what, 5 hours? That's ridiculous. Like, it's crazy that we've gotten to the point where like, that's our expectation of these things just working. Like they just have to work.
Bro. So my buddy's daughter, I'm at his house last night and she comes up to me. She's like, my iPad's dead. Can you charge it? And I was like, honey, I was like, there is no power right now. I can't charge it. I'm sorry. She's like, well, like, can you just turn it on for me? I was like, well, no, it's dead. She's like, so you can't charge it. I was like, no. She just like looked at me like, what are you talking about? You know? So yeah. Anyways, that's a, yeah, I'm a couple, dude, I'm drinking this espresso right now and about to go train jiu-jitsu after we're done talking. But that's what happened last night. Just was another one of those eye openers, you know?
Dude, and it's a rabbit hole you can go down to. Two things that I'm thinking about. One, like our perspective here is also so different. Like we live in a bubble in many ways that we don't realize also that like some of this stuff is just par for the course in other places of the world. I was listening to My First Million podcast, who actually Matt Walker got me onto. Shout out to Matt Walker. I love that podcast now. And one of the episodes they had was interviewing Connor Price, who's like a viral TikTok artist. Really interesting. Like he's gotten super popular with his music, but he hasn't done it like the traditional, like, you know, going out, signing with a label, whatever. It's strictly through like viral TikTok videos that he does with his wife. It's a really, really fascinating episode. It's one
he's
of my
not like
favorites.
One of those guys that like shows up at the mall and starts playing the piano, is he?
No, but those videos are really good too. No, he's a rapper, so he comes up with his own music, but he launches all his music through TikTok videos that kind of tell a story and are fun and kind of have like a surprise to them. And then it's like the launch of the song. You should look it up. They're really cool. But one of the songs he did was kind of this thing where he like spins the globe and he's going to make a collaboration with a rapper wherever his finger lands, right? And his finger lands in, I forget, but it's a country in Africa. And it's a really, really cool song. And one of the verses by this rapper in Africa, but in the interview, he was saying how like it took months to get like to communicate with this guy because he had to wait for there to be electricity for long enough for him to even upload his music. Like that's how things just are in other places of the world. Like this guy was an artist and the cool story is he probably would have never been discovered or found had there not been this connection. But like we even take for granted here that we always can connect on this little thing, right? Like literally 24/7 power goes out, you still have internet. Right? Like you still have your phone that you can tag into and like search, you know, when the power is going to go back on. There are places where like literally had to wait, I think it was like months just to upload the song that you came up with because he's like rationing the times where they have power to do that. So it's wild. That's what I think of because, you know, we also take for granted what we have here, knowing that like we're already like in the top, like whatever percent of like cushiness and comfort. And we take that for granted.
Dude. Yeah. Anyways, anyway, that's
people just should go check out that podcast because It's really good. And that's what made me think of. But one of the things I wanted to talk about, man, because I know this is going to come out. So we're first week of February. And so I've been programming Flex on the Train Hard app. And really quick, because I'm super excited on this next cycle that's launching on Monday. So if you're either on the Train Hard app or you've been thinking about it and you want to follow like a pretty regimented hypertrophy program, this is a great option for you. The nice thing about the Train Hard app is then you also have access to Force and you have access to EMOM. So if you're wanting to bounce around a little bit, you can. But if you're like me and you want something that's like, hey, these are 6 weeks that build on each other and they'll get you stronger and hopefully help you put on some muscle, we're starting on Monday and we're going to work to a 5 rep max on the deadlift, on the front squat and the bench press. And the way it's going to work is it's going to be 2 weeks of 9-9-7-7-5-5. Where you get a little
9-9?
Yeah, 9-9-7-7-5-5. So pretty good volume and at tempo. But again, like the way that I've gone about my training, and that's exactly what I write into Flex is the days of me like doing threes and ones, super heavy, trying to bounce out of it just to get like a certain weight on the bar are behind me. And I know we've talked about this. So I love the more higher volume sets with a tempo because that means that I'm definitely not going heavy. It's going to be heavy in that like rep 8 and 9 are going to suck, but it's not heavy in that like literally it's close to the maximal load that I can do. And for me, that just makes my joints feel great. Like I never feel like I'm risking, you know, like slipping a disc or like, you know, tearing something. Like those days of like the high risk stuff is so behind me. So anyway, first 2 weeks, 9-9-7-7-5-5. Then we have 2 weeks of wave loading. So 9-7-5-9-7-5. Then a deload week of just one set of 9-7-5. And then we have 5 rep maxes. So super simple way of like progressive overload with those lifts while not making it super repetitive to where like this is, you're doing 5x5 for 6 weeks. So there's like just a little bit of variation, but just enough regimentation to like, and I don't even think that's a word, but just enough structure to make sure that, you are hitting that. Okay, I went heavier last week than this week, doing a pretty similar, if not the same rep scheme, so you can track your progress.
Is it cheating to wear straps on the deadlift?
No. I don't think so. And I think this
Do
is
you
the,
use straps?
I use straps. I don't use straps for as long as I can. And then I use straps when I feel like I need to. So
So
for
you're
me, it's
double
one of those.
overhand the whole time, and then you use straps when you kick it, when you can no longer hold a hook grip.
So I will go double overhand, no hook grip for as long as I can. So my light warm-up sets.
Yep.
Then I will go double overhand hook grip
Yeah,
for
because it's
as long as I
uncomfortable,
can.
dude. It's so it's dude, it feels like shit. I mean,
And then, yeah, then when I get to the point that my thumb is going to rip off, I just put straps on because I
sure.
don't want the loading that I have, especially for like a set of nine heavy with a tempo, to be limited by what my thumb can do, right? Like I'm trying to overload my hinge, my hamstrings, my low back, in a good way. So yeah, but what I don't do is I'm not like doing my empty barbell or my 135 set with straps because then I'm also never getting the grip training that I think is super important. So that's how I approach it. But
You
good
know, I've been
question.
thinking about that a lot. Like, because whenever I'm deadlifting, I generally follow like the force program. And, you know, I'll get up to like, let's just say like 405. And I don't know if it's because the amount of jujitsu I've been doing. I don't know if it's because I don't like load up the deadlift. I mean, I load it up like once a week, but sometimes when I'm using a mixed grip, I feel like something. I don't know if it's subconscious or I don't know what it is, but something's like, dude, beware of your bicep. Beware of your bicep. Like, he's talking. Like it's talking to me. It's saying like, hey man, you always rotate your left hand. You always do it that way. Maybe switch to your other hand or maybe just continue double overhand. So I've been doing a lot of double overhand, but then all of a sudden my ego gets in the way. I'm like, bro, I want to lift more weight and I don't want my grip to be a factor. So I need to go ahead and go buy some straps because I haven't used them in years. But for those of you who are unfamiliar with what straps are, essentially, in a lot of people use these for Olympic weightlifting. A lot of people, for the dynamic lifts, they go around your wrist and then they kind of like fall within like the category, like in between like your thumb and your hand. And they just kind of, it's just like a little 1 inch kind of strap. You take that, you rotate around the bar, and then you basically curl it so that now not only is your hand engaged, but your wrist is also engaged on that object because it's getting pulled on by the strap. So that helps you maintain better grips without that's the best way to describe it, right, Gabe? I mean, that's straps in a nutshell.
Yeah, I mean, it's essentially just a way to not have the movement you're doing be limited by how much you can hold on to, because at the end of the day, your grip strength is going to be weaker than your hinge strength, your even row strength. I use them for rows a
Oh,
lot,
Rose. Yeah.
honestly, because my lats can move a lot more weight than I can just hold on to. And
Yeah.
you're leaving stuff on the table. You know, it's kind of one of those things that for people that come from like a CrossFit background, you kind of throw the baby out with the bathwater. Like, is there a benefit to learning how to hook grip and do a lot of things without strap? Of course, right? You would argue that's functional. You're not bringing straps with you whenever you go, so that if you need to pick up something heavy in the real world, you're like, wait, let me go get my straps. I get that, right? But you don't completely disregard it as a valuable tool, because if you're trying to overload certain muscle groups, you're leaving gains on the table if you're stopping at the point where, like, man, I can't hold on to these 85-pound dumbbells anymore when I'm doing these RDLs. Like, dude, get some straps and grow some huge glutes. Like, that you're leaving
I
those
need,
gains on the table.
dude, I need some straps. Okay. That's that. Okay. My takeaway so far from this podcast is I need to go to the Rogue Fitness website and go pick up some straps. A long time ago, when I first got into CrossFit, the only straps were available, were like super long, dude. They were long. There was a variety of different styles, but they were really long. And so what would happen sometimes when you were snatching is that you'd snatch, and then if you miss the lift and you
Oh
let go,
no.
right? By the way, don't ever clean with straps on. Don't do a clean to your shoulder with straps on, please. Anyways, so if you're snatching though, you could go overhead, no big deal. And then if you miss it, you just let go of your hand and it just flows right out. No problem. But at the time, the straps were really popular for deadlifts in particular, rows like Gabe was talking about. So, I ended up working with Rogue, this is years ago, to make like a 4-inch or a 6-inch strap instead of an 8-inch strap. So that when, so you didn't get as many rotations on the bar, which was fine. But once you got it overhead, you were able to dump it faster and it rolled out quicker. So, you know, make sure you find the right strap for what you're looking to do. But I just haven't used them in years. So I'm about to go check them out later on today.
You talking about like back in the day just reminded me of a headline I saw that I've been meaning to ask you, and I actually completely forgot, and I want to get your thoughts on it. The Morning Chaka put something up the other day. I don't know if you saw this, about how all the best athletes, CrossFit athletes, used to come from California, and now it's all like people in the mid-century. Did you see that?
I just saw that like they broke down what regions and stuff people came from. I don't know why. It wasn't like there was there anything controversial about it? I don't know.
Okay, here it is. So the title's a little controversial, but you got to get those
You gotta
clicks.
get some clicks.
The Fall of California at the CrossFit Games.
Oh boy.
That's
Oh.
the title. The Fall of California. Dun dun dun. And anyway,
I mean,
it
dude.
goes on to just basically by the numbers say that, from 2007 to 2014, many athletes from California like Josh Everett, Nicole DeHart, Jason Khalipa, Christian Clever, Valerie Verbal. All the who's who back then were all from California. And now if you look at, a lot of the up and coming athletes, it's coming from more of like the central US.
For
So.
sure, or even overseas. Yes, I agree with them. I mean, if you look at a lot of the training stemmed originally in California, I think maybe because we had access. I don't know. I mean, I was able to go to the original CrossFit gym. I was able to go to the first one ever. I was able to go take a class from Coach Berner in 2006 because of where I was located at. And I think a lot of people in California had more access, so maybe that contributed to it. Especially considering that it all kind of stemmed from the Santa Cruz, NorCal area. Maybe that had something to do with it. Plus, the CrossFit Games were in Carson for years and in Aromas. So there was a little bit more attention throughout California and that kind of sparked it. Then, as it got bigger and obviously it moved to Madison and whatnot, maybe that expanded it out. But yeah, I mean, I would say that I agree with that Morning Chalk Up article. I mean, back in the day, dude, California region was like, bro, it was hard, man. When you were getting ready for regionals,
Stacked.
bro, it was stacked. Like you'd look at our NorCal region and you were just like, damn, like you got top games competitors. And then you look at some other regions, you're like, ah, that wasn't as crazy. But that's the ebbs and flows of the sport, man. It's been fun to watch.
It's just funny because the title was very much seeming like it was taking a stab at California, but I think it's just you got
Course
to
it
get those
was.
clicks.
Yeah, dude, you're trying to get the clicks. I mean, come on.
Dude, one thing I was reading the other day that I really like. So I always kind of like write things down when either I'm reading or listening on podcasts. But dude, this idea of big changes and how simple they are when they're ruthlessly consistent. Dude, I love that, man. And the podcast I was listening to when I heard this was from Aaron
Was it Nick Kerr?
Straker.
Oh, who?
No. Aaron Straker. It's a smaller podcast. He's a nutrition coach. It's called Eat, Train, Prosper. Shout out to those guys. They put out some good stuff. And so he has gone for a year, like trying to get the best physique of his life. And he's super jacked. He's like 191, I think he finished, like this year of training with like less than 10% body fat. So big jacked dude. And he just went through like the entire year of how he did that. And I think that people underestimate how long stuff like that takes and also like what ruthlessly consistent means. And I think that, this applies to what it took for you to be successful in CrossFit Games. I think this applies to what it takes to build a successful company, a successful brand, something that we're trying to do now with Train Hard that's relatively new. Like ruthlessly consistent, I think people think means 80-20, which usually actually boils down to like 60-40 when you write stuff down. But like it's so much more than that. Like it's so much more like doing the thing that you're supposed to be doing long enough and consistent enough that like most people wouldn't do that. Most people wouldn't, weigh and measure
How about
their
Mr.
food.
Beast? We've talked about like five
Exactly.
times. Dude, he's a great example. You know, and I'll let you finish your thought, but then I want to talk about Nick Bear.
Well, I think he's a great example of that too.
Dude,
And
100%.
I think that the more that I spend time like reading books and listening to podcasts from people that I admire in different areas of life, whether it's athletics, business, leadership, whatever, it becomes more clear to me that there's no such thing as an overnight success. And everyone that's done it has gotten there because they've done like one thing and stuck to it for much longer than people are willing to acknowledge. Like everyone I think sees a Mr. Beast or a Nick Bear or a Jocko or whatever, and they're like, man, like they were naturally gifted and got there like this. Like no one sees the years that weren't captured on YouTube or when they didn't have a podcast or when they weren't, but they were still doing the thing. It just wasn't out there for you to see. And I think that that's been a really good mindset shift for me in having considerably more patience and knowing that, you know, as long as every year I'm moving in the right direction to some of the maybe loftier goals that I have, like it's not going to happen overnight, but it's definitely going to happen if I don't deviate from the direction that I'm headed. Like well, it's 100% going to happen.
Well, if you think about it, I would say that most people, and maybe I'm just drinking my own bathwater here, I imagine in the industry, in the fitness space, like let's just say in general, I'd say actually in general across the board, most people I think hit their prime in terms of like financial gains, growth, whatever you want to call that, and success. I'd say late 30s, probably early 40s through their early 50s. I'd say somewhere in that range. Like if you look at people and you look at a lot of successful people, I imagine most people saw a significant shift in their income, their ability, probably even their happiness when they got into their 40s because they knew who they were and they already had years and years and years of accumulated knowledge. Do you agree with that? I mean, because that's my take just from like looking at overall. I mean, if you look at like most people, they're like in that age group.
Yeah. I mean, I appreciate your take on that because I think that, you know, you've surrounded yourself, you know, because of, you know, you being an entrepreneur where you live and all that stuff with a lot of really successful people. So I think that, yeah, I would take your word for it more than anything. I think that I'm in a kind of very interesting in between now where, you know, I have friends that I grew up with, went to college, whatever, but like we very much just kind of deviated on like where we want to go, especially like having a family. Like most of my friends don't even have kids. Yeah. So I'm kind of in a place where like I'm in this weird limbo, you know, like I'm not really as close to people that I used to be very close with because, you know, we've gone this way. We moved out to Texas. We have a family. Like, you know, I'm like really focused on everything that I'm doing at work. And not to say that they're not, but they're just, you know, doing other things, other priorities, which is all good too. So I think I'm kind of in that limbo of like shifting and trying to find what that new circle is, if that makes sense.
Yeah. I mean, because I think about like Nick Bear, I was listening to his podcast. I drove up to, oh, by the way, bro, dude, how cold was Lake Tahoe? I mean, Lake Tahoe was hella cold, bro.
It was the coldest water I've ever been in. I've never, because I dip my head in my cold plunge all the time when I get in and when I get out. And I've never gotten a brain freeze.
I've never gotten a brain freeze.
And I literally, dude, I was nervous. For 2 seconds, I was nervous. And we were there. It was me, you at Lake Tahoe. And Liz, shout out Liz, was standing on shore. And literally, I told her this and we were laughing about it. I had this thought. I was like, dude, like, if we get messed up in here, like, is Liz jumping in to get us? Like, what's that look like? I'm sure she could have saved us.
I'm driving up there and I'm listening to this Nick Bear podcast about the five things that he has, five like factors that he believes makes a successful eight-figure business. And I get up there and we're in Tahoe and I'm like, Gabe, bro, we got to jump in the lake. We got to jump in the lake because I was doing a day trip. So I just drove up and drove back. And for those unfamiliar with the Bay Area, it's like a 4-hour drive. It's not crazy, but it's, you know, it's 4 hours, right? So like I woke up at 4, or I left my house at 4. I got there at 8, snowboarded, did a bunch of stuff with the team. And then I'm on my way back and I'm like, dude, I got to make sure that my vibe is right. My energy is good. I'm feeling good so I can make sure I get home safely. Right. I'm like, what better way to do that than to go jump in the lake with Gabe? And Lake Tahoe is basically a culmination of a bunch of like, water that comes from the mountains and is snow. And like, it's cold. It's snowing everywhere up there. And dude, we walk into the water and it was like super wavy and we get in. I'm like, oh boy, this is pretty cold. But the first time we dunked under, it wasn't that bad. I don't know why the second time was so bad. I think it's because like, it was a wave crashing. That was also like, felt like 30 degrees, but man, my head instantly Like I got a brain freeze. Like I had just taken a huge sip of a Slurpee. I'd never had that happen to me in my life.
Yeah, man. It was cold. It was super, super cold. And I
Someone
do
will
the
need to
cold water
explain
a
that to
lot.
us. Someone will need to explain what happens there. I got like that's like an Ask Huberman question. Like, hey man, so how come when the water's coming at you like a wave and you go underneath it, it made my brain freeze? But if I'm just like in my cold plunge, it's not that big of a deal.
Well, I know the thing that I've always known, because I don't even have a plunge that's like circulating water even a little bit like yours, the more stationary the water is, like you pretty quickly develop like a little like layer
That
of like
thermal layer.
warmer
Yeah.
water. Yeah. So I do try and move around a little bit when I'm in there. And I mean a little bit because honestly, it gets a lot harder when you move. So given the fact that it was so windy and the lake was like all over the place, we weren't getting any of that effect. So no, it was super cold, man. But as tough as it was to get in, and it wasn't really tough to get in because like we
What?
drove
It
all the way
wasn't tough
down
to.
there and we were obviously going to do it. So there was no like, usually when I'm here, no one's watching. Like I've never backed out from doing it, but dude, I stare at the cold plunge before getting in probably longer than I'd like to admit. But anyway, we had no choice, so we got in. But either way, man, brain freeze aside, if you could bottle up how good you feel when you get out, you would make a lot of money.
Oh,
It's unreal.
dude, I'd be able to have 50 home gyms. If we could just, we'd have whatever we want if we could bottle that up. And, that was it. So, dude, you got in there, got all fired up and headed back. But one of the things I wanted to bring up was this Nick Bear. So, he talks about these five factors that he has learned from building his business from zero to, I believe he said he's doing like, I don't know, 50 or 80 million. Now, each business is a little bit different. Obviously, he creates supplements. So, revenue will be a little bit higher. I'm not quite sure what his profit margin is on that. Just a different business than the digital service business, like the one we're in. But anyways, it doesn't matter. As I'm going through and listening to his podcast, I'm like, whoa, okay. I'm like, all right. But then he says something like super captivating me. He's like, so I'm in my dorm room, whatever. I start Bear BSN, right? Bear, no.
Performance nutrition, BPN.
BPN. BPN. Like I start BPN. Hey, he goes, guess how much money I made the first year? Like sub, I'm like, ah, oh, I wonder what he made. What do you mean? It's like 25,000. I was like, oh, that's not bad, right? He's like, year two, guess what I made? He goes, 25,000. He goes, year three, guess what I made? He goes, 25,000. And if I'm not mistaken, he goes, year four, what do you think I made? 25,000. And then he decided to move to Texas and basically document his life on YouTube. And then it kind of just started to take off from there. But what's interesting about that is you talk about this idea that big changes are simple if you're ruthlessly consistent. Talk about someone like him, right? Like he didn't come from an entrepreneurial background. His parents were, or his grandfather or his dad was like a dairy farmer, and it was very much so like blue collar. These are his words, blue collar type living, and he had never had exposure to entrepreneurship like that. And so for him to go year one, year two, year three, and still have the same revenue. And then have all these doubts come up in his mind about why is he doing this? And then boom, just being ruthlessly consistent. And now, he's doing, 50, 80 million in revenue, but no one really talks about those first couple of years that got him past that. So shout out to Nick Bear. I'm looking forward to going out to Nashville at some point and being on his podcast and working out together because that guy's a beast.
Dude, and that's the thing, man. Like, I know I couldn't have weathered 4 years of that. Like, if you're making 25,000 in revenue, that's not even profit, right?
Yeah, like
You're the sole, this is what you're doing full time. So he's a sole operator. So how much of that is he using to like, help him live? Probably even less. You do that year one, you're definitely like, damn, like, all right, if things get better, I'll keep going. Then
yeah,
you do the same thing year two, and you're
bro.
like, dude, if things get better, I'll keep going. And then the same thing year three. Like, how many people in that situation just go and apply for the job, starting salary, like 50K? Like, I'm already doing more than double what my company was doing. Like, it's a stable paycheck. I get paid every 2 weeks. Maybe I have some benefits. I got some, 2 weeks paid vacation. Like, it's so easy to, it makes all the logical sense in the world. Why would you keep working 80 hours a week to make 25,000 in revenue? This thing hasn't grown for 2 years when you can easily get, you could work for UPS and make more money and have benefits and have the security of a job. But that's what I was saying last time is like there are a lot of people that I think have the same maybe skill set, maybe even more like business acumen, whatever, because you said he didn't have a background, right?
Yeah.
Than Nick Baer. But what they don't have is the tenacity to go through those 4 years of, you know, eating shit to get to the point where now everyone looks and it's like, wow, like must be nice, right? Like having an eight figure like supplement business must be easy because he's like super athletic and very captivating. Like, no, like it's not easy. And it takes a lot of years of like being okay with that. Yeah, I love those stories, man. Those stories fire me up so much because it's just a war of attrition. That's all it is, man. It's like, how many times can you, in the face of the logical decision being A, keep doing B because you know that there's a slight chance that that could be the thing?
Yeah, dude, I'm all about it. I mean, look, NC Fit, you know, for those, you know, I opened the gyms in 2008 and like, you know, a lot changes, you know, like we saw some early success for sure. And then we saw more success through corporate wellness and we saw some success doing different things. And we saw not some success during COVID in particular, right? And now with Train Hard, we're building something that, you know, we talk about this idea of like 40s and 50s or even like late 30s, 40s, 50s, because when I look at like what we're doing at Train Hard, I feel like that's a culmination of me being the 15-year-old at the front desk of a health club. That's the way I feel like. I feel like I've been in this industry my entire life. And now Train Hard is a example of, yes, we impact people through the gyms. We impact gym owners through the NC Fit Collective. But this is a new way that I could really connect with people and make an impact. And so anyways, it's this idea of like ruthlessly consistent. Like I'm ruthlessly consistent in the idea that I want to make a bigger impact. And that goes with our men's club. That goes with our app. That goes with our gyms. Like I feel like we're barely even scratching the surface of the amount of people that we can impact to help them on this never zero mindset to like always get after it every single day.
And I think that like, you know, on a more maybe relatable note to literally anyone that's listening to this, I think the ruthlessly consistent thing applies to fitness and nutrition in such a real way. Like, you know, you look at someone like you and the way you look, the way you're built, you've been ruthlessly consistent for how many years? Like how many years would you say you've been like training? Literally, you never take a full week off. I don't even think you would take 3 weeks off. Like how many years has it been, you think, since you took more than a week where you haven't trained?
Since I graduated high school. Because I worked at a gym. And right. So, yeah, I might've been doing bodybuilding or Muay Thai, but since I was like, what, 17, right? 18. So what is that? Like 20 years.
20 years of ruthless consistency will get you to look a certain way. And I think that, you know, it's unfortunate because I think that a lot of the marketing and messaging out there with a lot of like fitness products, nutrition products, diets, they're very dishonest about the timeline that it takes to look a certain way. And that doesn't mean that you can't improve the way you look in 30 days. You absolutely can. But I think that a lot of the, you know, covers on a magazine or the guy that's trying to sell you the app or the training program or the guy that's telling you should do carnivore or that you should do this, he looks a certain way, but he looks a certain way for a reason, not because he did whatever he's trying to sell for 30 days. And I think that if people could just reset that expectation and understand that it takes a long time and ruthless consistency, like you can't just be like, hey, things got busy for 3 months. So, you know, I'm out and I haven't been to the gym in 3 months. Like you have to understand that that's 3 month, probably times two, a 6 month setback to the time that it takes to get there versus the person that's been training consistently, literally for 20 years.
Well, I saw what you wrote about with the, you know, like the old school magazine, like in the supermarket. It's exactly that.
Oh, he's on the newsletter.
I'm on the newsletter. It's cool, right? Like, yeah, I mean, you could have good advice, but you just need to stay consistent with it. And that's one of the things that I've learned from all the emails that come back to us. So we sent out as part of the Def Reset with Jocko. I mean, we got a lot of people did that. I mean, Chris Pratt promoted it. I mean, dude, we got what, 80,000 people did that, which is a lot of people. And we sent them out an email and welcomed them to the Never Zero newsletter, which is an additional newsletter. Gabe has started a kind of like a diary. I don't know, not diary is probably not the right word, journal, where he's also sharing his thoughts through his own newsletter. But on the Never Zero newsletter, which goes out to a lot of people, we asked for their response back, like we wanted to get their feedback on how Def Reset went, what's going on. And it was shocking to see how many people talked about how the first month gave them like this big boost And now their inspiration is to continue that going. But like, we got hundreds of responses, and the whys were powerful to why people are training, you know, to keep up with their kids. Like, I had one guy, he was 45 years old, just had a brand new kid. And he's like, dude, he was just speaking to me. He's like, I'm 45. By the time I'm 55 or 60, like, I still want to be able to kick my son's ass. Like, I still want to be able to get after it. And I'm like, fuck, I love that, you know, but it starts then, right? Because if you have a kid at 50, you got to start training that day to continuously keep up with them as they get older.
Yeah. And it's an ongoing thing, man. Like, it's a little cliche, but it's so true that it's never too late to start. Like, you know, if you're listening and you're like 40s, 50, whatever, man.
Yeah.
I read a really interesting article the other day. I don't know if you saw this. It's been making the rounds. Peter Attia sent out a newsletter about it too. This guy who's either 93 or 97. And he's like, for that age group, like the world champion indoor rower for that age group. But the interesting thing about his story is he started working out at 70. So at 70, he figured out that, like, hey, this is something I need to do for my health. It was something that he enjoyed. So he started taking rowing really seriously. And now he's like the, you know, I don't think there are many people in this age group, but he's like the world champion in the upper 90s. But the interesting thing is they did a study on like his, you know, VO2 max and like his actual like cardiovascular health and his engine. And he has like the cardiovascular stamina of the average 40, 50 year old. So the key takeaway there, man, like, dude, I'm not saying wait till 70 to start, but there's no age. And this guy proves it, man. Like, there's no age where you're like, you know what, at this point, you know, I'm just hanging it up because it's too late. Like, that is so not true.
Dude. Yes. Yes, yes, yes. And more yes.
Any good books you've been reading lately? I was like listening to what your what's on your bookshelf.
I was rereading. I actually, you know, it's funny. I had my computer on like a huge stack of books. So, dude, I was reading The Boys in the Boat. I don't know, man. I got like halfway through it, and I just like it wasn't calling to me. So I don't like being that guy. I normally like finishing things. But it just like, I don't know, maybe I just wasn't in the mood for this type of book at the time. So I reopened Extreme Ownership with Jocko and Leif and just been reading that again.
Have you, you just watched the movie though?
To watch the movie because
the movie is really good because it's a cool story. I didn't even pick up the book, but it's worth watching that story because I love like the, you know, American team underdog. Like, it's, dude, you come out of there and you're ready to run through a brick wall. I was ready to start rowing. Right.
Dude, well, I mean, you know, back to other books. So I have been reading quite a bit of books. And this is like a good note for parents out there is, you know, we were working on some things with Ava in regards to eating. And I think that there's a lot of really great information out there with people who have gone through this before us that could provide insight and guidance. And so something I've been doing is just like we did with leukemia diagnosis, I've been reading a lot of books about nutrition, about eating for young girls. And I've been spending a lot of time on how do you talk? How do you talk about these things? How do you connect over them? How can I learn from other people's situations so I can leapfrog where I'm at? And just like we talk about fitness all the time, there's other people that have an expertise in these situations because they've gone through it. And so what can I learn from it is something I'm constantly thinking about, whether it's, I mean, these aren't the exact same, but like yesterday I was training for the tactical games. I want to rob and steal as much knowledge as I can from whoever I'm with to leapfrog me 10% further. I could probably try and figure it out on my own, but it's going to take me a lot longer. Same thing goes with this type of stuff. I could read books, get insight. So that's what I've been spending a lot of time on lately, trying to educate myself on these particular subjects.
It's one of the like most useful bang for your bucks things that you can do for like personal development in general, or when you're dealing with like a specific thing, is like find the people that have already gone through the problem that you're trying to solve and read the book, take the course, ask them questions. Like, why try and like, you know, trip over your own 2 feet to learn the lessons the hard way when there's people that have gone out there and have done exactly or dealt with what you've been dealing with? I think that that's something that, you know, I've been trying to do a little bit more of. And there's luckily, I mean, we have like unlimited access to people and information. So it's out there.
And it's not like most problems, I'd say, have already been overcome or have been gone through by somebody else. And there's probably some type of documentation, probably some type of something that can at least open your mind, have you look at things through a different lens or support you in some way. And worst case, you spend a couple hours reading, it's worthless, you put it down. And for that reason alone, it was beneficial because you at least tried to learn something new, right? But I think that this idea that like this situation's uncommon or that's only unique to you, there's so many people that go through so many different things. If you could find the right person that could story tell around that, I think that's really powerful. And we get this all the time with leukemia, right? We get people reaching out to me, I don't want to say every day, but probably like weekly, who are like, hey, like this person's going through this. Do you have any advice for this? And it's like, dude, I'm happy to share because if I could just leapfrog them 10% or give them some little dose of hope, that's my responsibility.
I think that's two really
important things. Ava's Kitchen, by the way, bro. You're coming to Ava's Kitchen. Let's go.
Dude, I told you. I mean, I talked about it on this podcast. And, you know, me and Ariel have been talking a lot about like this year and things that we want to do. And one of the things was, you know, we were missing the giving component, I think, to just like how we handle money as a family and like what money means and what we want to do with it. And dude, honestly, so I'll tell you, because you texted me later in the day, because I didn't tell you before that we were even thinking about it or whatever. It's something we've been talking about since the beginning of the year. It lined up. My mom's able to come and babysit. Cause I was like, honestly, the missing piece of the puzzle was like, we can't leave Shay, but we also can't bring him to the event. So what was that going to look like? But once that came into place, we were like, perfect, we're doing it. And when we did it, it was like a really cool moment. It was like we almost celebrated it because it was cool that we're in a position where we're like comfortable to do it, excited to do it. And it also just obviously is a really cool cause to support. I know it means a lot to you and means a lot to me in many ways in the conversations we've had and how I've seen, like we've gone to Nigu and seen what they do. Like I've seen the videos, like we went there as a team, like you've talked about it. I have a connection with Ava. So it's cool to have that be the first, because that was cool too. Like we've never in any meaningful way, like donated. And this was like the first thing. And it felt so good, man. And Dave Ramsey talks about it all the time. Like one of the most enjoyable things you can do with money is give. And it's so true, man. And we haven't even been at the event. It was literally just like going in and doing the reservation. Like it just felt so good. So yeah, dude, I'm excited. It's going to be a lot of fun. And I was excited to get your text message when you saw it.
So when this podcast releases, it's about 2 weeks out from that. So Ava's Kitchen is March 2nd this year. What it is, an annual fundraiser. This is, I think, year seven, dude. I think it's year, maybe five or seven. It's enough. It's multiple years in a row. And we fundraise heavily. I mean, we've fundraised millions and millions of dollars so far for kids fighting cancer. And my wife really leads that charge. And so this year, you know, obviously everybody on the team pretty much knows that this is something that like I do, and you know, it's powerful, but I never like really bring it up to anybody because the tickets are expensive and I never want to make people feel obligated to show up. You know, that's not the goal. But then all of a sudden Ashley comes up and she's like, hey, did you know Gabe got a ticket today? And Ariel's like, what? I was like, no way. So anyways, dude, I'm looking forward to seeing you there. And for anybody listening who wants more information, just check out the podcast show notes. It's avixkitchen.org. If you do want to come, it's in San Jose, Bay Area, and you get to meet Gabe himself. If you show up, Gabe will give you a signed t-shirt and a hug. So make sure to come out to the Bay Area and see us.
Oh man, it'll be a lot of fun. So on the website, it looks like this is the seventh one because there wasn't a 2021.
Okay.
At least based on the galleries tab.
Oh yeah. You know what? We did we did that online, but dude, seven. Wow. I mean, that's power, dude. 7 years of doing anything. It's kind of like when we celebrated the 20th men's club workout. Like it's cool. Consistency, like we're talking about, matters. Like it's ruthless consistency. And year seven is really how you start making an impact every single year.
Well, dude, the cool thing there, this applies to everything, right? Is I'm sure that when you hosted the first one, both the men's club or Ava's Kitchen, you probably like, it's impossible to think of what the seventh or the 20th one would look like, or even thinking about that someday you'll get there, right? Like you just kind of start with one and you're like, well, we'll see where this goes. So it's always cool to get to a place where you're like, it's been 7 years of this. Like it just feels like something that we do every year, and every year feels like its own, but to look back and be like how it's built, I'm sure is really cool to you. I obviously haven't been in the past, but I'm super excited to go this year.
Yeah, and it's cool to see what the impact has been, and Ashley's done a phenomenal job with it. So yeah, Ava's Kitchen is something we do. And I think back to like the give component, you know, I believe that it's our goal to make so we could go ahead and give. And there's a variety of things that, you know, I think each family could find out what that means for them. And it's all relative to what speaks to them, you know, and it could be a lot of different things, but find something you care about. And I think it just lights an additional fire under your ass to not only train hard, but also to work hard. Because now it's something that's like deep to your core that you want to give to. But if you don't make, you don't have anything to give. And so now it's just another factor that'll drive you to do more. And I think that'll impact your life across many different ways in a positive way. So think about those things, you know, it has to call to you. Because if it doesn't, then just like anything, it'll kind of fall flat over time.
Yeah, I think if you find something that for whatever reason you're super passionate about, because we did a lot of thinking about what we were going to like commit to this year. Like it was like, you know, do we donate to like I have a connection to my old high school and I think that they do a great job. Like, you know, there are other things that we're passionate about. So I think that it is important to take the time and find something, because I think that if you find the right thing, it is very motivating. Because like I'll speak to like our experience of like signing up and like making the commitment now, like we want to do it every year. Like we want to be able to do more. Like you want to like, it's such a good feeling. It's so motivating because you're like, hey, like I've worked hard for the things that I can provide for my family and for like fun experiences and like, you know, the little like things that I enjoy and like and buy here and there, flight lessons, whatever. But it's like a different motivation to be able to be like, hey, this is where this is going. And it's something bigger than me or bigger than things that will just benefit me and my family. It's a cool feeling and it's very motivating. Like you want to be able to do more of that for sure. And that requires you to put in the work, and bringing it back to what we're talking about, being ruthlessly consistent at what you do so you can, you know, make so you can give.
Dude. Yeah. I'm stoked to see you. I'm really looking forward to it. We're still trying to tighten up some of the live auctions. I put this out on IG stories, but if anybody listening to this podcast is a cool live auction item, something that's like really like quote unquote priceless, like you can't go out and buy it. Let us know, because we'd love to auction that off. This audience is incredible. Like if you have a house on like the cliffs somewhere and somewhere cool, or if you have something in mind that's very unique, please let us know so we could auction that off. Because a live auction is really how we generate, you know, additional revenue for the kids.
Awesome, man.
So are we moving on to this, the dopamine detox and the fact that you're taking February off social media?
We could. We hit on a lot of good things, but February off social media. You can still like tag me. I didn't get rid of the accounts, but
does that really mean you're off of it then? I mean,
I deleted all the apps on my phone. So I
checked. What's considered social media, by the way?
So I got rid of Instagram, Threads, Twitter, YouTube. Because the last time I did this, one other time, and I kept YouTube, and I just ended up watching a shit ton of YouTube.
Yeah, so like YouTube Shorts would kind of like fall under that.
Yeah. I don't have TikTok, so that doesn't count. So obviously Instagram, Facebook, Threads, and Twitter is everything that I took off of my phone. And for me, it was like, so the idea of a dopamine detox, also I heard on a podcast, was just, so if you have something, the guy that was talking about it specifically, what he had cut out was weed, smoked a lot of weed. That's just was his vice. And what it does is it like raises your baseline of dopamine that you need to like just feel good, right? Because you're constantly like hitting a button or doing something that like gives you that little like, ooh, that feels good. Ooh, that feels good. So the problem is that like everything else over time, like with caffeine, with anything, you just need it more often, or you just like, you don't feel good. You're like in a mood, you're whatever. So it's good to every now and then take something that you know you use for that, like, you know, little bit of dopamine rush way too much, and just kind of cut it out completely so that you reset your baseline to something where now you're having, you know, a more on par reaction to some things that should, you know, bring you joy and dopamine. And I don't think that I was particularly getting too moody. Maybe I was, but, you know, I take a lot of pride in being like a very like positive person in any circle that I'm in. And, I felt like I was maybe a little bit combination of like stress and like a lot of travel, but it just seemed like a good idea, especially because I spent way too much time on my phone, I think, to just try it for a month, without YouTube, because I told you last time I just ended up watching a lot of YouTube. And it's funny, my screen time has already gone down so much. And now that like Shay's around, like I never want there to be a time where like he's even remotely like, hey, you know, like, you know, and my face is in my phone. So I still have the accounts because I do check them every now and then. But like when I'm on my computer for work to like see, you know, what's going on Train Hard, just to keep an eye on stuff that I need to for work, because I'm doing that when I'm on my computer, but it's not on my phone at all. And I'm not like on my personal account. But I didn't want to get rid of it just because A, I couldn't really find the button. But B, I know that people like tag me and stuff and whatever, and I'm still going to go back to it. Yeah. And I actually want to like, I'm trying to figure out like what creating content looks like for me long-term in a way that's sustainable, but also doesn't like turn into me consuming more content than I'm creating. So I'm also using this month to kind of think about that stuff, which is why I came up with the newsletter. So if anyone wants to, Dad's Training Diary is just like, you know, I write a lot, obviously for Train Hard, for NC Fit. But I feel like I've always written for like a brand voice or for like stuff that we're trying to put out that like is supposed to sound a specific way, but I don't really write as like just how I would talk or how I would communicate stuff. So this is literally like, I mean, I proofread it a little bit, but like, it's just like me writing some words, putting some pictures up. If people enjoy it, great. I think it's a good exercise for me to also just like get things out of my head that are in my head that are training, nutrition, and dad stuff related without it having to be like super, super polished. So it was more of like a, if you really enjoy the stuff I put out on social media, here's a way for you to stay connected. And it's been fun. We'll see what it turns into. I'm also learning this platform, Beehive, which is a new newsletter platform that I think could be a pretty good solution even for us. So I'm playing around with it with this thing because it's kind of similar to Substack in that it's very much made for creators and has some really good ways to, you know, tap into their ad platform, or, you know, they have a really cool way of like newsletters recommending other newsletters. So you're kind of like cross-pollinating, and it's all like, if you like this type of newsletter, here are some that I recommend, because they have like a whole thing. So it's been cool to just learn that platform too, because I think it could be a cool tool that we could use on the Train Hard side.
Well, you got to let me know how it goes with the off social media for the month of February, including YouTube, which, dude, yeah, I mean, including YouTube shorts, man, those things are, it's basically like Instagram reels. So got to keep it posted on how that goes. I completely agree on the dopamine detox. You know, I think that you can get dopamine in so many different ways, including the fact that I'm drinking espresso while we're having this conversation. And, you know, you can get that from cold plunging and working out, and there's so many different ways you can get it. But I think the finding that like relationship, it was interesting. I read a newsletter from Miranda from Street Parking. And
oh, I saw it. I didn't read it, but I wanted to read that one. Yeah, I saw that.
She essentially wrote like, I don't want to use the word dissertation, like she wrote like a letter to Instagram and kind of like almost like talking about their toxic relationship together and how Instagram allowed her to build a business that is thriving and provides for her family. But it also has caused her a lot of, you know, up at night stress. And she goes on, she goes on to share a lot of things, but I think a lot of people feel that same conflict, that it provides a lot of benefit. Like you could see what your friends and family are doing, especially from a business perspective for people like us. And then there's the other side, right? Where you feel like you can't really even be yourself to a full extent because people take shit the wrong way, or they're just looking for a reason to yell at you. And so she goes into detail kind of talking about that. And then she finished it off. I thought this was pretty funny. Like her letter to Instagram. And at the end, it's like, Facebook, you're next. It was just funny. Like basically like, here's my letter to it. And she's taking time to kind of reflect on how she wants to use it. But I think you doing the same is great. And yeah, I'd love to learn from what you experience and how, you know, I could lean on that as well.
Yeah, man. I mean, you know me, I love trying these like little things for like a month at a time. I think it gives me a good thing to like focus on, challenge myself, whatever. And honestly, it hasn't been that much of a challenge past the first couple of days. So the funny thing about this, and then, you know, we can move on, is the first day, because I was going to do it February. So February 1st. So the first day was the day we were leaving Tahoe. So I got rid of all the apps that morning, and it ended up being like a nightmare travel day. Like my flight got delayed, canceled. I booked on a different airline. Then literally my last plane that I was going to take out of Denver were boarded, all ready to go, everyone off the plane because they found like a dent under. Dude, that's worst case scenario. The worst thing that can happen to you because you know you're screwed when that happens.
Yeah, you get
you're
on
the
ask
plane
you,
and they're like, everyone needs to get off the plane.
It'll only be
Luckily,
20 minutes. You're like, no.
luckily they had another plane ready. Because if it was a smaller airport and they have to like fly in a plane, dude, how long is that going to take? But either way, it was a nightmare travel day. And so, you know, I'm alone. I'm not even with Ariel and Shay. I would literally have been on my phone the entire time. Because what else do you do?
Right.
You know?
Right.
And so it was a tough first day that I didn't have it. I like bought a magazine. I was like looking at my camera roll. I was like listening to a podcast. I was like, man, it is really boring to not have social media when you're just spending. I spent the entire day in the airport, like the entire day. So it was a rough first day, but I think that was good. Cause like once I got through that, now that I'm like back home, I'm busy, the kids, whatever. I haven't even noticed that much. And it's just good because like, I don't have a reason to have my phone at all times. I keep forgetting my phone places. Cause like, I'm not checking it all the time. It's been good, but, I'm definitely going to come back. I just hope to come back in a more balanced way. That's the goal.
Love it, man. Well, guys, if you're, if you're listening to this podcast for the first time, thank you. You're listening to it for the 100th time. Thank you. You know, every week we just put out different episodes. There's Coffee with Kalipas on Mondays. We have Q&A episodes. If you do have any questions for the podcast, just go ahead and send us an email. I send out this Never Zero newsletter. If you just respond back with different questions, that's a great way for us to get them. We've recorded a bunch for February, but we're still available for March, of course. And make sure to check out the podcast show notes. I'm having a hard time speaking today. So you could, you know, check out Ava's Kitchen, check out all things Train Hard and everything we have going on. And dude, I just appreciate everybody who listens to this podcast. I appreciate everybody who wants to train hard, who wants to get after it, and who wants to try and level up, including Gabe and I. So any final remarks there, brother?
And if you're trying to get jacked over the next 6 weeks, Train Hard app, Flex starting on Monday, new cycle. It's a good one. I'm 4 weeks in because I'm like a month ahead of testing it. And I've really, really enjoyed this one. I'm biased, but I really enjoyed it.
And make sure to get some straps. That's my takeaway from this podcast.
That's right.